I just love it when William Federer is on. It's like sitting in a class again, and I didn't really like classes, per se, but I like William Federer's class. If he was my teacher, I would be there every day on the front row, enthralled. And we're getting a little bit of a history lesson. Of course, July 2nd today is the day that the vote for independence came to America. This is a seminal day, not only in America's history, but in the world history. The uniqueness of this moment, the inheritance that is ours as Americans, and the blessings that have come throughout the world because of this moment in time, somewhere around 250 years ago or so, is truly stunning. And it's a pleasure to be able to talk with William about these things. William, we're kind of in the Middle Ages. We're going all over the place from Rome to the Middle Ages, working up to America, the environment that kind of spurred America. Was America a Christian nation? Well, it sure acted like one. You know, let's go from Middle Ages and back up to America, and then we'll get into your book, Miracles in American History. Maybe we'll tell a couple of those. Really cool book I have sitting right here in my hot little hand. So take it wherever you want to go from here, William. Go ahead.
Sure. So we talked about the Reformation starting 1517, Martin Luther, and then the Muslims surround Vienna, Austria in 1529. 100,000 Muslims are surrounding Vienna.
Wow.
If Vienna falls, they're going to take all of Europe. And so the Martin Luther says, the Turk is the rod of the wrath of the Lord our God. If the Turk's God, the devil is not beaten first. There is reason to fear the Turk will not be so easy to beat. And Martin Luther says, the Turk is the flesh of Antichrist. He's the beast of Revelation. And because the Turks would just come in and wipe out the, you know, all the Christian communities. And anyway, so Charles V is the Catholic Holy Roman Emperor. He's the King of Spain and by marriage, King of Austria. And he is the title Holy Roman Emperor, which means he's got this extra duty of defending all of Christendom, all of Europe, from this Muslim invasion. And he tries to stop the Muslims on his own, but the Reformation is splitting up Europe. France has a king named Francis I. He was actually captured by the King of Spain. And after some concessions of giving up some territories, the King of Spain lets Francis I go. Well, Francis I decides he's going to make a treaty with Spain's biggest enemy, the Ottoman Turkish Muslim Empire. So now you got France helping the Turks. And so this causes the King of Spain to not be able to protect Hungary. And so the Muslims come in and capture Hungary and kill King Leopold, you know. And so this is the situation going on in Europe. So Charles V, King of Spain, Holy Roman Emperor, realizes he can't stop the Muslim invasion on his own. He needs these Lutheran princes that have bought into the Reformation, and so he makes a deal with them. It is called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. It is the first treaty ever to recognize Protestants. And in this treaty is a little Latin phrase that had enormous repercussions through the next centuries. The little Latin phrase was, cuius regio, ius religio, which means whose is the reign, his is the religion. In other words, look, Protestant king, believe whatever you want in your kingdom. I just need you to work together with me against this Islamic invasion because they sort of want to kill us all. And it works. They were able to stem the invasion. But in the next century, different kings believed different things. And so you have England being Anglican, Scotland being Presbyterian, Holland being Dutch Reformed, Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran, Switzerland Calvinist. You get the picture. And then they have, you know, different religious wars, and then the Peace of Westphalia in the 1600s, you know, sort of recognizes these new boundaries. Why is this important? Because if you do not believe the way your particular and you are persecuted and you fled. So after this treaty, this Peace of Augsburg, kings could believe whatever they want for their kingdom. But if you didn't believe the way your king did, you're a refugee. And so suddenly Europe is thrown into this mass migration, confusion, religious wars of people going from one country to another simply for conscience sake. Those were the ones that spilled over and founded colonies in America. And that's where we pick up with each colony being founded by a different Christian denomination. So it was all Catholic, right, in Spanish. So Spain controlled not just the Caribbean, not just Florida, not just South and Central America, but it laid claim to all of America. And for a century, they had, you know, Ponce de Leon wandering around Florida. They had Hernando de Soto wandering around the Mississippi River. I mean, these Spaniards are looking for gold, Coronado. They're not finding any. And so they really don't have an interest in settling it, but they still claim it. And so 1588, Spanish Armada is going to invade England and smash the Reformation. It's destroyed in a hurricane. And so now the other countries of Europe said, you know what, Spain's not as tough as we thought. Let's hurry up and settle North America. And so it's like an Oklahoma land rush. You have France settling New France, which becomes Canada. The Swedes settle New Sweden, which eventually becomes Delaware and New Jersey. The Dutch settled New Amsterdam, which turns into New York. And the English settled Virginia after the Virgin Queen Elizabeth and New England. And so they're all hurrying up and settling. But it's the same thing over here as there. It's one denomination per country. So, you know, Canada is French Catholic. And Massachusetts is Puritan. Rhode Island is Baptist. Connecticut and New Hampshire are Congregationalists. Maryland was originally a Catholic colony. Pennsylvania was Quaker, and William Penn's holy experiment to see if people of different denominations can live together in the same geographic area. And Virginia's Anglican. And they don't get along, same as Europe. They don't get along, and they're tar and feathering each other. They're chasing the Puritans in Massachusetts. Not only hung witches, 19 of them, they hung Quakers. Four Quakers were hung as heretics. Gosh. These colonies didn't get along. And so what happened was when the revolution starts, these colonies have to do something. They have to swallow hard and work together with these other denominations to fight the King of England. And it's very similar to the Catholics and Protestants under Charles V, the Peace of Augsburg, working together to stop this Islamic invasion. These 13 colonies have to work together against the King of England. After the Revolution, their big fear was that one denomination, maybe the Anglicans or Episcopals or the Congregationalists, would try to slip their denomination in as the national one. And so that's where they put a handcuff on the federal government. But the different states could do whatever they wanted, sort of like a racetrack with 13 lanes. Different states expanded religious freedom at their own speeds. And so you had, you know, Maryland and Rhode Island and Pennsylvania way out in front, and they're like letting Jews in. And then you had Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they're keeping the congregational denomination established until 1818 in Connecticut and 1833 in Massachusetts. You could not hold office in Massachusetts prior to 1833 unless you were a congregational Protestant. So religion was under state's jurisdiction, and they expanded it at their own speeds. Then you had an influence of evolution come along. Charles Darwin, evolution of species. A guy named Herbert Spencer wanted to apply evolution to everything he could see. He coined the phrase survival of the fittest. Herbert Spencer influenced Harvard. Harvard law professor Christopher Columbus Langdell, he applied evolution to the legal process and said, hey, instead of going back and reading the founding fathers, just take the most recent law and have it evolve. And this influenced Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. on the Supreme Court. And he's like coming up with all new strange radical decisions of, you know, that the law is something that evolves. And so you basically have the birth of two camps for Supreme Court justices. The original camp that says, let's go back and see what the founders intended. And this evolutionary camp that says, forget the founders. Let's just have it evolve into whatever our political agenda is. And that's the battle goes on.
Let me interject right there. We've talked about this extensively on the broadcast, one form or another. This idea of Darwinism, this isn't just religiously undermining, it's legally undermining, it is constitutional, it's our inherent. I mean, I don't know if there's been a more damaging doctrine that has ever been introduced in this country than the idea that we came from monkeys.
Yeah. And interesting, our founders put a provision into the Constitution that it can evolve, but it has to be the will of the people. It's called the amendment process. And you need two-thirds of the states and three-fourths of the senators and congressmen. In other words, it needs to be a super, super majority and you pass an amendment. Why? Because we want to preserve government of the people, by the people, and for the people. When you have a judge usurping this and doing it in his own courtroom, it's a tyranny. It's a minority shoving its will down the throat of the majority. That's the classic definition of a tyranny. And so the founders said, hey, we can have a 13th Amendment ending slavery, 14th Amendment making sure that freed slaves get equal rights, 15th Amendment making sure that freed slaves can vote. You know, we have the 19th Amendment where women can vote. We know how to pass amendments. So we can have it evolve with the will of the people. We don't need a judge in his courtroom coming up with a new penumbra of meaning with a, you know, broaden the definition of words and so forth. Anyway.
I have to laugh. I think it was Keegan on the Supreme Court now. I can't remember her first name. I think it's Elena Keegan. I had to laugh. They talk about the precedent of certain decisions. She's scared about a Roe versus Wade that it may get overturned here shortly because the Supreme Court is turning conservative. And she said, well, we have these precedents and we just need to adhere to them and they're just recklessly turning them over. And I just laugh out loud. Are you kidding me? You know, go back 100 and whatever years. What do you think they did to the Constitution 150 years ago, overturning it, or 120 years ago? What precedent do you think they overturned then? But now these precedents are sacred. Now Roe versus Wade is sacred, or the other things. I just had to laugh about it. It's a joke.
Yeah, well, Dred Scott Supreme Court decision. It was a precedent. It said that slaves were property. Plessy versus Ferguson, it was a Supreme Court decision. It said, separate but equal, that blacks have to be on separate train cars and separate drinking fountains, and it's quote-unquote separate but equal. But it was not equal. It was all lower class, and this was the Supreme Court deciding these things. So, yeah, the Supreme Court makes bad decisions. And Lincoln said that if the people on vital decisions, which affect the whole country, surrender to the Supreme Court and make it the law of the land the moment the decision is made, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers and surrendered their leadership into this eminent tribunal, you know, basically a little oligarch. So even Lincoln said that the people of the United States are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts. So you think of it. In America, the people are king. The word citizen means co-king. So our founders decided we didn't like the King of England telling us what to do. We flip it. We make the people the king. So you get to decide what career you want to take. You're not limited to some class of, you know, whether it's merchant class or, you know, working class or military class. You can change your career. You can change where you want to live. You can decide who you want to marry. Beethoven was given piano lessons to the daughter of a Czech duke. And they fell in love, but she was not allowed to marry him because he was just a piano teacher. He's in a lower class, and here's Queen Isabella of Spain. You know, she's like a young, you know, 9-year-old, and her uncle's the king, and he betroths her to some other guy. And luckily, the guy dies, and he betroths her to somebody else, and that guy dies. She finally got him to give her the right of first refusal. But here she is going to be the queen. She can't even decide who she's going to marry. But this was normal for the world. In Islamic countries, they decided you have to wear a burqa if you're a woman. In America, you get to be the king of your life. You get to decide what you want to do with your life. And then the word citizen is co-king. We are all together deciding what's going to happen in the country.
I want to ask you
a miracle.
I want to ask you specifically, John Jay, there's a case, I think it's Chisholm versus Georgia, I believe. John Jay, the first Supreme Court justice, this kind of debate comes up, and he says, Americans are sovereigns without subjects. And please discuss that a little bit. I mean, it goes along with what you're saying, how unique that is, how revolutionary that concept. We are sovereigns without subjects.
Right. So the most common form of government, the default setting for human nature, is a dictator, a gang leader. And so there have been lots of attempts to limit kings, through limiting them through their own words. You know, the Bible stories where, you know, Cyrus and Darius, and they said, well, king, you said this, so you got to stick to what you said. And then there's traditions where what past king said limits the current king, and then there's parliaments, and you know, the Magna Carta, 25 barons surround King John on the fields of Runnymede and say, if you pick on one of us, you're picking on all of us, and so you got to, you know, not arbitrarily take away our rights. Basically, history is filled full of stories of trying to limit kings. America cuts the umbilical cord and says, you know what, we're just flat out not going to have a king. We're going to make the people the king. It had never been tried before on such a big scale. Now, ancient Israel, for 400 years, they did not have a king. Each person was taught the law, but the priests stopped teaching the law, and the people ended up having chaos, and they go to the prophets, Samuel, and they say, this isn't working. We want to be like all the other countries. We want a king. And the Lord tells them, they did not reject you. They rejected me. Anyway, then we fast forward. A couple attempts in China for, you know, kingdoms to rule without a king. And the emperor shows up with a 100,000-man army and pulls the walls down around your city. So China is landlocked, and this emperor makes sure that there isn't going to be any more attempts of ruling without him. The other side of the map is the Mediterranean. And so you have islands and rocks and storms and water. It's hard to have a totalitarian dictatorship. So these Greek city-states, they get to practice all kinds of different things they practice, but we focus on Athens. And it was a democracy where the people are the king, but there's 6,000 citizens, and everyone has to go to the market every day to talk politics. If you don't show up for a couple of days, you don't know what's going on. You're called an idiotus, an idiot. The Greeks develop all kinds of ways to influence the populace, like theater, where all the citizens would go to this outdoor theater and they would watch these plays, satires, tragedies, you know, where they would ridicule and buffoon certain points of view and honor and extol other points of view. It was all political. It was Saturday Night Live. They would all push political agenda, but they would use comedies and tragedies to do it. They would basically portray somebody as noble, and you'd want to copy that person, and then they would make fun of the other people and make them look like bumpkins and idiots. And so that's come down to us as Hollywood, where they'll portray people holding old traditional values as backwards and, you know, Archie Bunkers and idiots. And then they portray people that are, you know, pushing these new values as, you know, heroes and so forth. But then they develop another way to sway people called rhetoric. They're speaking techniques to sway the populace. Ethos, logos, pathos. Ethos is the ethical reputation of the person speaking. Who is this person? How do they know what they're talking about? That's come down to us as the introduction. And so you introduce a speaker. Well, this guy has written books, and he's been on the radio and TV, and, you know, he's a, you know, a professional this or that or the other. He can say the same words, but the more letters you can put behind his name, the more ethos, the more ethical trustworthiness. It's a persuasive quality. The second is logos, the logical argument presented. And then the third is pathos, where we get the word passion, and it's the emotional appeal. And even Plato said, or Aristotle said, no logical argument is successful without an appeal to passion. And so these are all techniques to sway the populace, the 6,000 citizens, because it's the people that are in charge of what's going to happen. It worked until Alexander the Great's dad, Philip of Macedon, found out that he could bribe citizens of Athens with money under the table. And they would betray their city, and they would gather around themselves useful idiots. And, you know, Alexander the Great's dad, Philip of Macedon, is conquering Thebes and Amphipolis and all these different places, and using this gold to bribe these prominent citizens. And so they're meeting together. They say, well, we've got to get our Athenian army together to stop Philip of Macedon. These paid liars would stand up and say, well, wait, let's not jump to conclusions. I hear Philip's not such a bad guy. I hear he's not conquering cities. He's liberating cities. They actually like him. And these paid propagandists would gather around themselves useful idiots, sort of like Indivisible, sort of like these students that have no clue. You know, Antifa, they found that most of the Antifa are kids still living with their parents. That's who Antifa is. It's a bunch of rebellious kids still living at home with mom and dad. And they have all this time on their hands to do this nonsense. And anyway, Lenin called them useful idiots. They're pushing an agenda that they're being promoted by this paid George Soros guy. And anyway, so we got ancient Israel attempted to rule itself. They go back to King Saul. We have ancient Greece tries to rule itself until Alexander the Great's dad conquers them. Then we got Rome. Rome had a king named Tarquin around 600 BC, and he had a son rape a virtuous woman named Lucretia. And Lucretia is so upset at having lost her honor, she gathers the other Roman leaders together and commits suicide right in front of them. And these Roman leaders are so upset, they kill King Tarquin and his son, and they make a rule that if anybody in Rome ever declared themselves a king, anybody could kill the guy without any repercussions.
Wow.
So for 500 years, nobody in Rome wanted to ever call themselves a king. And so it was a republic. Now, it was they had 600 senators who represented the people, but they were not elected senators. They were hereditary, back to the original guys that killed King Tarquin. It was their families. But they still were representing their districts. Over time, they got more powerful. And then you had the 600 basically boiled down to three parties. One was headed up by Caesar, another Pompey, another Crassus. And they would do, you know, triumvirates. And then finally Crassus dies, turns into a tug of war between Caesar and Pompey. Caesar raids the federal treasury, buys a bunch of Mussolini-type people, and they get rid of Pompey. Now Caesar is unopposed, and he makes himself dictator for life. The senators try to save Rome by stabbing him to death on the Ides of March, March 15th, 45 BC. Anyway, it turns into chaos in Rome, and the only way they can restore order is to get his nephew, Octavius, to become the emperor. And Octavius, you know, ends up becoming an emperor, and he owns the entire Roman Empire. And the whole thing is a pyramid structure to society, how close you can get to, you know, Augustus or Octavius Caesar. And what does he try to do? He wants a global census. He wants a Chinese social credit system. He wants to have a census of the whole world. He wants to track everybody under his thumb. But this census causes Mary and Joseph to have to go to Bethlehem to get counted. So God still had a plan behind the plan.
Wow. This there's the music. More on the other side, 30 minutes more, one segment more with William Federer, AmericanMinute.com. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Kirkman by calling 877-817-9829 or order at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio-Superfood. I've taken Bio-Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
What a great conversation. Great, really, history lesson from William Federer from AmericanMinute.com. Great website. I'd like to make you aware of some of the specials over the Power Mall. The Power Mall this week, it is our country's birthday. The charter of our country is the Declaration of Independence. This is what we celebrate as the beginning of our country. It is a miracle. It is an inheritance. It is fantastic. We should never be ashamed of it. And shame on Nike for pulling the Betsy Ross flag off their new shoe. Shame on them. Shame, shame, shame on Nike for what they've done. It is disgusting, the corporate agenda that is subverting your inheritance, ladies and gentlemen, and more power to the center. We don't like it. You are sovereign without subject. You are endowed by your creator. Over at the Power Mall, we got 10% off this whole week across the website. Now, we're not, the phone line's not going to be open on the 4th or the 5th. We're going to be eating some hamburgers and some all beef hot dogs. So, please allow us to do that. But you can still go online and get the 10% off. REM Sleep this week, all free shipping on REM Sleep and auto ship. You can set up auto ship to get discounts on all of that. REM Sleep at the Power Mall. We're loaded up on it. 10% off everything. And also any order over $50, because it's the 4th of July this week, you will receive Forever 1776. Just ask for it. Any order over $50, ask for the book. Forever 1776, I wrote with my uncle. And really, it's about America's heritage, your inheritance. And getting that emotional, that pathos, like William talked about. Not only the logical, the logos, the logical connection to our path, our past, and where we are, where we should be, but the pathos, the emotional connection. Because once you have that emotional connection, once you feel that, the animating contest of liberty goes through your veins, you cannot deny it. And nobody can take it from you. And, like Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. That word liberty, that jewel, that crown of the achievement on our country, the Declaration of Independence, ladies and gentlemen, please, 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 for the love of all that is good in the world, put a copy of the Bill of Rights on your refrigerator, Declaration of Independence, get a copy of the book, check out the William Federer's American Minute so you understand history, so you can't be manipulated by all these quote unquote new ideas. This is your time right now. And conviction will win out. I believe that firmly. And people like William Federer help us understand that conviction, understand who we are. So we'd love having him on. So anyway, thepowermall.com. That's a long explanation of what's going on at the Power Mall. Thank you so much for your support and your purchases. Thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. Getting back to William. You know, you were talking about Alexander the Great's father and bribing the politicians and paid propagandists and spokesmen. I get the feeling when I watch CNN, even Fox News, corporate media at certain times, I see these people, they're just talking heads. They're just propagandists. They're just, I don't know, prostitutes may be a strong word, but they seem like journalistic prostitutes. They have an agenda that they keep trying to push on me. Do you see that same feeling historically?
Yes, yes. You go back to, you know, England, the king would have to put a stamp on the front of every book to make sure it was approved. There were the king's authorized printers. That's why it was a big deal for Samuel Adams to have the committees of correspondence. It was basically an underground internet communication with the colonies because the kings controlled the presses. But our America's founders realized that they were breaking away and they were setting up a form of government where the people ruled. I was going to mention a democracy is where the people are king, but each person has to be at the market every day. A republic is where people are the king, but they rule through representatives. So the REP in republic is the REP in representative. So a republic is where the people are king, ruling through representatives. A democracy in its purest form is where the people are king, but each person has to be there every day. So a democracy was limited as to how big it could grow. Now, after the Cold War, the word democracy took on a general meaning of people participating in the political process. So the word democracy means two things, but as far as an actual political system, it only worked on a small level. And so a republic could get bigger because you can take care of your family and your farm and you have someone in your place that goes to the market every day and talks politics there, your representative. So we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. We're pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves. We are the king and we are ruling through our representatives. And they can't do whatever they want. Number one, we got a constitution with a bunch of rules that limits them. And number two, we'll vote them out. But we, the people, are the king. And John Jay said, the people are the sovereign of this country. Gouverneur Moore said, the magistrate is not the king. The people are the king. And so you have to understand, imagine visiting a king in the Old Testament. You're going through the streets of Jerusalem, and you're seeing murder, rape, and crime. And you finally get into the king's chamber, and he's all worried with his head in his hand. He looks up at you, and he says, did you see all that crime coming in here? I wish someone would fix it. And you like reach over and tap him on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you're the king. This is your kingdom. You're the man accountable to God to fix this mess. That's like somebody in America watching TV or listening to the radio thinking, man, I wish somebody would come along and fix this mess. Hello, have a finger reach through the speaker and tap you on the shoulder. You're the king. You are the one accountable to God to fix this mess. Well, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Since when does the king sit on his throne and say, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do? Hey, butler, come here. What am I supposed to do? No, it's your job to get educated on the issues, seek God's will, and you tell your representatives what needs to happen. You're the king. So
I think
America, you don't just have...
Go ahead. You go ahead. No, you go ahead.
In America, you don't just have the privilege of voting. You will be held accountable to God for what happens. If they're teaching stuff to little kids that Jesus wouldn't teach, Jesus said, if you allow one of these little ones that believes in me to stumble, it's better that a millstone be put around your neck and you be thrown in the depths of the sea. And here we are, we're the king, and we're allowing them to teach stuff to kids that Jesus would never teach. The whole LGBT agenda is, in its practical application, is simply a creative way to declare war on Christianity, on Bible values. In other words, Jesus himself said, in the beginning, God made them male and female, right? And so we're saying, their tactic is to guilt trip Christians into being more Christian than Christ. if you're really Christian, you will tolerate this agenda being taught to these little kids. Question, would Jesus teach that to little kids? No. So you're saying if you're really Christian, you won't act like Christ. If you're really Christian, you let them teach something Christ would never teach. And if that behavior is not a sin, arguably there are no sins. If there's no sins, you certainly don't need a Savior.
So
and if we're made in God's image, and this God is so messed up, he's put in men and women's bodies, and I'm made in this God's image. What a messed up God. They are undermining all of Christian morality and biblical values under the name of tolerance.
Since when are we taking spiritual lessons or biblical lessons from LGBT curriculum? I mean, you know what I mean? It's like going, I'm just thinking by what you just said. It's very profound. We're letting them dictate the terms of us. We're letting other people tell Christians, we as Christians, tell us what Christianity means. It's insane.
Right. And here's Jesus was in Mary's womb from the moment of conception. The Holy Spirit came upon Mary and she conceived. John the Baptist was in Elizabeth's womb, right, from the moment of conception. He's alive. He's leaping in the womb when he hears the voice. You know, when Jeremiah, God said, I knew you in your mother's womb. And so for a Christian, life begins at conception. The moment that you have the 23 male,
chromosomes,
23 female, yeah, come together, and you have the 46, and that comes together and splits. The very moment that happens, there is life that is independent of the mother's life. I mean, it's inside of the mother, it's being nurtured by the mother, but it's its own DNA, its own brain waves, its own heartbeat, its own blood type. It is a separate human being inside of the mother. That's for those that are not familiar with biology, with mammals, the life comes into the world through the mother's womb. And so it is a brand new life inside of the mother's life. It's not her body. It's a brand new body inside of her body. I know that's sort of complicated for people, right? So it's not a lump of her tissue. It is a brand new human being that's growing inside of her body. That's
well,
every single person on earth has come into this world.
My wife said the most profound thing about that. Well, if it's not another human being or not another person or not another body, then why do they harvest organs from it? So why are they harvesting organs from this quote unquote fetus or cell, block of tissue if it's not a human? It's ridiculous. It's just illogical.
Yeah, and thankfully, with science and being able to look into the womb and see the baby developing, and here they have babies that are born that are as small as your hand, and they can keep them alive and they grow into, perfect human beings. And so all of the arguments of it not being a human life are disappearing, and it's coming down to flat out, it is a human being, someone to protect it and someone to butcher it. And that's back to the Romans. The Romans would have the baby born and they would decide whether to keep it or,
Glad, William, I am so glad that you are putting this in such ABC simple black and white terms, because for years we have been, guilted, like you said, you used the word guilted, put in a corner about this. We've been, different colors of this argument have been thrown at us. Look, this is very black and white. And, kind of paralleling with this, we as parents, if we let our children go to schools where they're taught this agenda and such counter to our beliefs, we as Christians anyway, or even moral beliefs, and then we are not taught in school the foundation of our country, the Declaration of Independence. We study the United Nations. We don't study the Bill of Rights like we'd study the United Nations. To me, those are the biggest indictments on our quote unquote government school system, public school system. I don't know what you think. You mentioned that everybody is to be taught the law in America. If America is going to be free, then everybody's got to be taught the law. Everybody's got to know these things. We are not teaching our children these concepts, who they are, the law, the foundation, the moral ramification. We are not teaching this. And public school is the biggest offender of this in the world. I just want to get your comment on that, because I'm just very upset about this. This is where the rubber meets the road for me.
So there are philosophers through history, Machiavelli, Hegel, Karl Marx, Alinsky, that said, how do you take a republic or democracy and turn it into a dictatorship? And it's times of crises. You have to create crises. You can go through, great online videos talking about, you know, Romania and Korea, and pick any country. And it starts with individual little tribes, but then there's a bigger army coming from without, and all these little tribes will work together to defend themselves against this bigger threat. And what happens is, in times of crises, they'll each lay aside some of their independence to stop this bigger threat. That philosophy has been adopted by Machiavelli and Karl Marx, that says, okay, if in times of crises people will surrender some of their freedoms, let's create crises. Let's send in agitators, agent provocateurs, provoking agents. Let's find people in people groups with grievances. Let's stir them up and cause this grievance to break out into riots and lawlessness and insecurity for life and property. And when it gets out of hand, everybody will knee-jerk reaction, say, we need the government to come in with a strong arm to restore order. And the government comes in and collects everybody's guns and takes away all your freedoms and takes away your freedom of speech so you can't offend somebody so that they riot. And yeah, they'll restore order, but when the dust settles, you will have flipped it and transitioned back to a dictatorship, a top-down form of government, from the bottom up to a top-down. And so this is how the British took over India. They would come into one kingdom, Bengal, and give the king some guns. Then they would go to another kingdom and give that king some guns. And then they would stir up and stoke ancient animosities until the kingdoms broke out into fighting each other. And then when they beat each other up really bad, the British would come in to restore order and they would take over. And then they would give some guns to another kingdom and another one. They took over all of India, a quarter of the world's population this way. I mean, it was the crown of the British Empire, but they controlled it. But they tried doing that in America, where they would come into the Indians and give them guns to scalp the Americans on the frontiers. Mm. This is what the KGB does, right? But this is our CIA. Mossadegh was the elected president of Iran after World War II. He was leaning toward the Soviet Union. And Eisenhower approved the first CIA plan to overthrow a leader called Operation Ajax, where our CIA goes into Iran, finds groups that have grievances, we stir them up to riot and give them guns, and when it turns into a chaos, Mossadegh's gone, and we put in our friend the Shah. He was, I don't want to use the word puppet king, but he was in office because of America. The British did the same thing, right? They took the old Ottoman Empire, and they put Abdullah as the king of Jordan. They put in Fazl as the king of Iraq. And this was Winston Churchill. You know, they were just putting all these friends in because they had their Anglo-Iranian oil company. They changed the name of it to British Petroleum Company, BP. but they had an interest over there. And anyway, but it's this idea. You want to take over a country, you send in people, find groups with grievances, you stir them up. They are being used as useful idiots. They don't see the big picture. They just think that, and it causes division. And when the rioting and insecurity for life and property gets large enough, everybody surrenders their freedom. And in the Congo, this worked. They actually created a race. So you had these, colonialist powers going in there, and they measured the people and they said, okay, you're a Hutu, you're a Tutsi. These people had always gotten along with each other. Then they split them. And then what they do, they pitted them against each other. And when they began to fight each other in the confusion, they could come in and take over. And so you have to bring division. So in other words, patriotism is the enemy. You got to get people to identify with a small group. And then you pit these groups against each other to cause social unrest. And that's when everyone is willing to let go of their freedoms.
Let me ask it in this sense. That was awesome, that description you just gave. I see this as a time of crisis, a moral time of crisis for any, not only patriotic American, but certainly any Christian American, can we use that time of crisis? Can we say, okay, the enemy is here. Can we use it to unify? Hey, so let's unify behind these beliefs, behind these concepts. To me, the Declaration of Independence, these American ideals are the only unifying principles that will ever work in this country.
Right. So the other side of the window pane, I use the little phrase, it's in times of crisis if people turn to Christ. So most people don't come to the Lord when everything's perfect. When do you pray the most? When you have a crisis. So what are the stories we love most in the Bible? It's when God's people are in a crisis, a hopeless situation, and God raises up little nobodies with faith and courage. Gideon and Joshua and Moses and, you know, David. And so this is a time when I use the little phrase, in times of crisis, people turn to Christ, and in times of crisis, leaders are raised up. So, yeah, we can respond, and I think it's going to come eventually down to a showdown. That same Cain killing Abel, but it's going to be the righteous seed of Abel and the unrighteous seed of Cain, and it's going to be, you know, magnified, and it's going to be the last chapter of the Bible thing, and the Lord wins. But
I'm glad you put that way, because I was talking to my Uncle Steve. He wanted me to tell you hi. He's a pastor and he just loves you. Anyway, that's a little personal
God
thing.
Bless
I had to put
him.
It.
Tell him hi for me.
Well, I bring him up because I was talking to him last night, and we're seeing this polarization. If people who believe in morality, who believe in the American ideal, who believe in patriotism in the Republic, if we continue to believe in those things, the way the other side is going, the way the corporatocracy is forming around it and trying to swallow it, if that continues, then we, the people who stand for the Republic, will be forced, forced, exactly, the word force. There will have to become a line in the sand moment. It almost seems inevitable.
Right. It comes down to free will. And the founders were in Europe. They had to believe the way the king did, or they were burnt at the stake. The Quaker movement comes along, you know, the Baptist movement comes along and says, wait a second, your worship of God is only pleasing to God if it's voluntarily given. There's a quote from Thomas Helwise. He was one of the founders of the Baptist faith in England. And the synopsis of the quote is, if the king can stand there on the day of judgment and answer for your conscience, fine. Believe whatever the king tells you to believe. But if the king's not going to be there on the day of judgment, you are accountable to God for your own conscience.
Wow.
Well, the king didn't like that type of teaching. They want everybody to believe the way they tell them to believe. And so, but this was the founding of New England. And they're like, look, Jesus himself never forced anybody to follow him. If he didn't, we can't. I mean, there's even a verse where Jesus said something difficult and many disciples walked with him no more. He didn't run after him with a sword and say, get back here or I'll chop your head off. No, Jesus turns to Peter and says, you want to go too? There's the door. You know, you read the context. He multiplies loaves and fishes, has a crowd following him around for a free lunch. And he's almost saying something he knows will be difficult for them to understand, to shake away those that are following him for the wrong reason. I'm the bread of life, you know, and they're like, whoa, this is too difficult, and they walk with him no more. So since Jesus never forced anybody to believe in him, we can't force anybody to believe in him. We want people to believe in him, but we can't be forced. And so this country was set up so that you would have the voluntary opportunity to turn to him, but not be forced. And so it's this bottom-up versus top-down. It's based on the concept God is love, and he loves you. And the more you love someone, the more you want that someone to love you back. God loves you infinitely. He has an infinite desire for you to love him back. Now, he doesn't need your love any more than parents don't need to have kids, have their kids to love them, but they want the kids to love them. And so here's God. He's love. He loves us. He wants us to love him back. He can't force us to love him because the very moment he forces it, it evaporates. And so he puts the tree in the garden, says, Adam and Eve, don't eat from it, but it's your choice. Children of Israel, here's the law. Here's the blessings. Here's the cursings. Please choose life, but it's your choice. So the God of the Bible is really into us voluntarily choosing him. Dictators and kings and tyrants, they don't care about your choice. They say, we want you to comply with us or we're going to punish you. You know, sultans and so forth.
Mm. We just have a couple minutes, William. Again, let me thank you for coming on, especially July 2nd, very special day. I just absolutely love your website and what you stand for. AmericanMinute.com is his website. Ladies and gentlemen, he's written a wealth of books. Miracles of the American Revolution is his new one with his wife, Susie, helped him write that or compile that. Check that out. Last question. If you could proverbially wave the magic wand, so to speak, what are the two or three most important things do you think to help us get back on track to where we came from in this country?
Memory. That's why my wife and I put together that book, Miracles in American History. I mean, you hear these stories of the British, you know, surrounding George Washington, and a fog comes and allows Washington to escape. Another's the capture of Benedict Arnold, who was going to betray West Point. And at the last minute, the spy is caught, and they make him take off his boot, and they find the map of West Point. And but you see the founders, you know, thanking God and having days of Thanksgiving. Memory. So one of the quotes from Arthur Schlesinger Jr. was a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian on John F. Kennedy's staff. The quote is, "History is to the nation what memory is to the individual." Mm. So if you can imagine an individual who has lost their memory, maybe they have Alzheimer's. They forgot who they are. They forgot who you are. It's really sad. Anybody can take anything away from them. Well, we sort of have national Alzheimer's. Here we are, the freest country that planet Earth has ever seen in 6,000 years of recorded history, with more individual opportunity and liberty, and we forgot how we got here. And we're like that Alzheimer patient staring out into space, and people are taking away our freedoms, and we're like, oh, okay. And so when I share these stories, it's like a flicker comes back into the person's eyes, and they look up at you, and they say, Bill, is that you? You know, and
wow.
And it's like, wow, this is who we are as a country. Let's keep it. AmericanMinute.com is my website.
That's fantastic. Again, such a pleasure. AmericanMinute.com is his website, as he just told you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very important day. I hope it means something to you. I hope you learn something. I hope you take something from it. Your place in history, your place in eternity is your time right here and how you go forward, your children, the people you influence, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, all this. Let's go into the future with truth, with justice, with morality, with freedom. Remember, we want you to be happy, healthy, successful, and free, just like God made you, ladies and gentlemen. ThePowerHour.com. We'll see you tomorrow. William, God bless you, my friend, and have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Todd.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY.